Approximately 2 million women from Indonesia, Sri Lanka, the Philippines, and other countries work as migrant domestics in Saudi Arabia. They're routinely underpaid, overworked, confined to the workplace, or subject to verbal, physical, and sexual abuse. On the second part of today's Underreported, Nisha Varia of Human Rights Watch joins me. She's traveled to Saudi Arabia to interview some of these domestic workers, and she has some thoughts on how the Saudi government should reform immigrant sponsorship laws. I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show. Hello.
Hello, thank you.
Are these domestic workers mostly in big cities like Riyadh?
Yes, most migrant domestic workers are working with wealthy families in Riyadh, Jeddah, but also in some smaller cities where, unfortunately, if they do encounter abuse, they would be less likely to get any help.
And it's mostly women?
Yes.
Where do they come from? I mentioned a few countries. I said Indonesia, Sri Lanka, the Philippines, but I'd imagine they come from a lot of different places.
Yes, the vast majority come from those three countries. You do have a couple thousand women coming from Nepal, Bangladesh, Ethiopia, and Eritrea.
And how do those countries, how did they become a source of workers for Saudi Arabia?
What you have, particularly in Indonesia and the Philippines and Sri Lanka, is a feminization of migration. There are simply not enough educational and employment opportunities for these women in their home countries. And I've also visited these countries, and these women often say if they could get a job at home, they would. And they are forced to go to the Middle East, where there's a huge demand for domestic labor.
They're also going to Malaysia. A similar situation recently made the news in Malaysia, where women claimed that they had been enslaved when they were just supposed to be domestic workers.
Yes, there have been several incidents of abuse in Malaysia lately, including a domestic worker who was also allegedly killed by her employer, and several who had such abusive conditions that they resorted to escaping out of windows from tall apartment buildings.
Right, by tying sheets together. So can you describe what conditions are like for these domestic workers?
What happens first begins in their home countries. They usually encounter recruitment agents who promise them great jobs, great salaries if they're to migrate abroad on 2-year contracts. In many cases, they are not given the correct information about what their salary will be or what the conditions will be. So they go to this country expecting something totally different and then find out that their passports are taken away from them. They're working usually 18, 20 hours a day, 7 days a week for months or years on end.
Doing what?
They are taking care of children. They're cleaning huge houses. They are caring for the elderly or the sick. They may be cooking. And they're really often, especially in Saudi Arabia, it'll be one woman who must take care of all of the needs of a household that might contain 20 people.
And the employers, if they're huge houses, I'm sure, are among the wealthier people in Saudi Arabia.
They are among the wealthier people, but it's very common to have a domestic worker. And on average, every household in Saudi Arabia employs a foreign domestic worker.
Now, I'm going to assume that at least some of these domestic workers are in good work environments.
Exactly. There are women who are treated well, get their wages on time, send this money home, and they are the success stories that all migrants hope to achieve, to be able to build a home for their family and send their children to school.
And how much money are they supposed to earn? I guess it ranges from the ones who get paid and the ones who don't get paid.
And it also ranges by the country that they're from. There's no sense of equality, equal pay for equal work. So a Filipino worker will be entitled to twice the wage of a Sri Lankan worker. And you literally get paid by which country you come from. It's usually in the range of $100 to $300 a month.
And why would Filipina, I guess, in this case, get more? Is it because they're considered better educated?
There's a couple of reasons. One is that they tend to have more education and be better English speakers. But it's also because the Filipino government has been much more proactive in protecting the rights of its citizens.
And English is important here. I'm assuming most of these women can't speak Arabic.
That's right. Sometimes households will want their children to learn some English and will have the domestic worker teach them.
On top of everything else. After you finish cleaning upstairs, you can come down and teach the kids some English. What are some of the horror stories you've heard about domestic workers in Saudi Arabia?
Well, far too many to talk about just now.
What about Nur Miati, for example?
Yes, I met Nur Miati, and she is a young Indonesian woman who was severely beaten by her employers. And she was also deprived of food, which is a very common abuse, and actually locked up in the household. And because of the conditions in which they kept her, she actually developed gangrene. And when she was finally able to escape and got medical treatment, they actually had to amputate her fingers because of how poorly she'd been treated. And what's more, even more outrageous about this case is that when the case went to trial against her employers, some of her testimony varied a little bit in the details, so they brought a countercharge against her, and she was actually sentenced to 79 lashes for making false accusations against her employer.
So she was punished, even though she lost her fingers.
In the end, it was appealed, but this is something that happens routinely. A domestic worker will bring a charge against her employer, and instead they will accuse her of stealing from them. If it was a case of rape, there have been many cases where the employers will say it was consensual, and then she will be charged with adultery or fornication, which is illegal.
Well, but I thought that males were also punished for adultery in Saudi Arabia.
They will be, but usually the punishments are meted out unequally, and it's very difficult for these women to get good legal representation, translation. They often don't know what's going on, and they might not be able to extricate themselves from these situations.
Does that mean that many of them were reluctant to speak with you because they live in some kind of fear?
We promise anonymity and confidentiality, and these women only speak to us if they are willing. And what I found is that many of them were really anxious to tell me their story. Many of them are very anxious for their governments to take more action to give them more protection. But what was the case is that many of them were unwilling to go to the police or to the Saudi authorities.
My guest is Nisha Varia of Human Rights Watch. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Don't any of these stories filter back to Indonesia, Sri Lanka, the Philippines? Aren't women warned now that they may not be signing up for something that's really good?
These stories are in the papers almost every day. And it really shows the desperation that many of these women feel. They simply have no alternatives. I speak to women who are crying. They don't want to leave their children behind. They don't want to go to a place where their physical safety may be at risk. And yet, how are they going to put food on the table? How are they going to send their children to school?
If they have little recourse going to the Saudi police, what about going to their own embassies?
In recent years, the embassies have begun to offer some immediate support services. In fact, there are so many women coming to these embassies every day that they've actually had to create shelters on site. Just last month, the Indonesian embassy in Riyadh had 500 women staying at the embassy shelter. There are thousands of women who come, and they're able to get shelter, usually some legal aid, and help with processing their tickets home. But they're totally overwhelmed. And some countries are better at this than others. The Sri Lankan embassy, the shelter had maybe one bathroom for several hundred women. They were only able to take a bath once a week, and they were not helping them to get legal assistance in a timely way.
Now, we're talking about Saudi Arabia, but don't these sorts of things happen everywhere in the world? I've heard stories about it happening right here in New York.
Exactly. Actually, Human Rights Watch has looked at abuses against domestic workers in over 16 countries, including the United States, Guatemala, Singapore. And one of the things is that domestic work has not been considered as real work. Very few countries cover these workers under labor laws.
And there are other problems that some women face, because there's also some of these women wind up in the sex trade. The same sort of thing happens. They think they're signing up for some kind of decent job, and they give up their passport, and the next thing they know, they're being forced into prostitution. It sounds to me like women in poor countries are incredibly vulnerable.
Yes, and this is why there is action needed on the part of all countries, those countries that are sending these women abroad and those that are employing them. There are actually steps that could be taken to raise awareness, to regulate these recruiters so that women won't be taking these types of risks with these lives.
Do immigration sponsorship laws address the problem?
Actually, immigration laws make things worse, particularly for Asian workers going to the Middle East. They migrate on visas which are tied to their employers. And in fact, in Saudi Arabia, they are not allowed to leave the country until their employer gives their permission.
And they can't change jobs either. Let's say somebody says, I think you're really good, come to work for me instead. They can't do that.
Exactly. And you find that if a worker is facing abuse, they simply can't change a job or leave their employer. And because most of these domestic workers are isolated in private homes, most of them are forbidden from leaving the workplace, they are in very vulnerable situations. I interviewed a woman who talked about when the tsunami occurred. She wanted to go back home to her family and see what happened, and her employers simply did not allow her to leave the country.
Now, these women are recruited in their hometowns? Is that what happens? Or do they apply for jobs? Is there any kind of an internet connection?
It happens both ways, where sometimes these local recruiters will simply go door to door trying to attract these women to go abroad. And other times they've heard about it from their neighbors. They might know somebody who's had a success story, and they approach an office where they can sign up for these jobs.
Now, I mentioned New York. There was a recent incident in Long Island where two multimillionaires were arrested on charges of keeping two Indonesian women as slaves in their home for several years and torturing them as well. But are our laws better?
Not that much better, actually. While there are some protections, for example, domestic workers in the U.S. are covered by minimum wage laws, they are not covered under all the protections of the Fair Labor Relations Act and things like sexual harassment provisions, even. And there are several domestic workers groups that are trying to pass legislation that would give these workers some of the same rights as other workers.
The only time it seems to come up is when people are appointed to high office and somebody says, hey, what about that domestic worker problem you had? In Hong Kong, they do have better laws, don't they? So some places have actually tried to redress these problems?
Exactly. And, you know, it's such a great example of how these are not problems that are just a matter of human nature and there's nothing we can do about them. Actually, with appropriate action and with public awareness, things can change. In Hong Kong, domestic workers have equal protection under the labor laws. You find that they have a day off. The parks are sort of taken over by Filipina and Indonesian domestic workers on Sundays. You know, it's not that they don't face problems, but when they do, they have legal remedies. They are much more aware about their rights. And, for example, when there was a proposal to cut their minimum wage, thousands of them marched on the street and the proposal was rescinded.
How long were you in Saudi Arabia and how did you locate the women you interviewed?
I was in Saudi Arabia for 1 month. And I encountered many of the women at the embassy shelters where they had already run away from their employers.
So there was no fear that they'd be punished because they talked to you.
Exactly. I also have spent a lot of time in Indonesia and Sri Lanka and was able to contact some of the relatives or neighbors of other women who had become undocumented workers in Saudi Arabia. And I met them at sort of private homes outside. And a lot of that work, they came and spoke to me with some risk that they would face a problem, but they were very anxious to talk about what had happened.
Well, part of the problem is all of this occurs behind closed doors, and it's difficult for anyone except the people involved to know that this sort of thing is happening.
Exactly. The isolation that workers face is one of the reasons why this abuse is so common and so pervasive, and why it's difficult for there to be enough evidence for the cases of abuses to be prosecuted successfully.
So what can be done about the problem? Should migrant domestic workers be discouraged from seeking employment in another country?
There are several things that should be done. First of all, they should have local employment opportunities so that if they migrate, it's because of a choice they're making rather than desperation. Secondly, they should be covered under labor laws so that there are limits on how many hours they're working each day, that they get a day off. That day off is one of the most important things that can happen for them to get outside of the house so that they can report abuse if they're facing any, so that they can learn about their rights. And I think it would just help balance this huge power imbalance currently there.
Well, if a court doesn't consider the loss of fingers enough evidence, what happened to her?
She is still in Saudi Arabia 3 years later, waiting for the resolution of her case.
And how does she stay alive? This is Nur Miati. We talked about her earlier.
Yes. Nur Miati was able to get assistance from the Indonesian embassy, and she had several operations to reconstruct some of her fingers and other injuries that she received. And she's waiting for a monetary settlement from her employer, who are currently walking free.
Now, perhaps the real answer is to improve economic conditions in the countries of origin so that these women are not so desperate. Is that possible? Because women tend to find it harder to work in many countries, especially if there are cultural reasons. But I would think that Saudi Arabia, which has so many restrictions on women's freedom, would be a country that would be reluctant to import women.
Well, it's very interesting. But I agree. One of the most important things that could happen is to create more employment opportunities for women in their home countries. And currently, these governments aren't doing a lot. There's a lot of money involved. I mean, the Philippines gets 15% of its GDP from the money that migrants send home. So instead of investing in local industries, they actually set targets for how many workers they want to send abroad every 5 years. And there's actually a lot of competition between these countries.
Take my women.
Exactly. So, for example, the Philippines has required that any country employing its workers should pay them a minimum wage, must give them a day off. Indonesia is unwilling to fight for those protections for its workers because that's its competitive advantage. Our women will work day and night, 7 days a week.
Nisha Varia is with Human Rights Watch. She went to Saudi Arabia to look into the situation of abuse of domestic workers. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.